Hi, this is Bob Kennedy, about to put you in contact with the world of people, places, and ideas. Through WBZ's unique electronic systems, you are in contact with the world of excitement on Bob Kennedy Contact. Tonight, when we again get into what is consistently one of the most controversial topics we deal with on Contact, the subject is UFO, unidentified flying objects, sightings across our country and the world that some allege come from outer space. This subject, above all, seems to capture the fascination of our listeners and cause our mailbag to swell noticeably after each show. And it, too, would seem that we never lack a couple of first-person reports for you. And tonight is no different. Ahead, you'll hear an interview with a New Mexico policeman who a few days ago saw an object take off and leave in its wake burning grass and impressions on the earth. We'll also talk with a cattle farmer from New York State who earlier this month not only saw one of these objects, but claims that he had a conversation with two little fellows who came from within the thing. It's quite a story, and one that we'll hear more of later. But first, let's meet our guests in the studio. Both names you should recognize. Walt Webb has been with us before. Walt is a member of NICAP, and as soon as Streeter Stewart manages to get in from our news studio, we'll welcome Streeter Stewart, of course, of WBZ News, and also a member of the National Investigating Committee on Aerial Phenomenon. And later, on our long-distance line from his home in Virginia, we'll have Major Donald Kehoe, who's the head of NICAP. That's our special guest. But first off, Walt, while we're waiting for Streeter to join us, can we start locally before we move out to New Mexico and then finally up to New York State? And I understand lately we've been having some sightings in the Lawrence area for one, and as you were telling me, before we went on the air, in some other areas around Massachusetts. But first off, and Streeter has joined us. Welcome, Streeter. Let's talk a little bit about this sighting in the Lawrence area. Now, there have been many sightings up there recently, have there not, Walter?
There have been, Bob, and I think Streeter is going to be able to fill us in more on the Lawrence case than I could. But there have been sightings up in New Hampshire, in Massachusetts again. And, of course, there have been these reports out in New Mexico. The recent sighting wave started out there.
What kind of sightings have there been up in New Hampshire?
Well, these are, as always, this is a very interesting thing to me. I'm in the process of pinpointing these sightings on a map going back about 10 years and seeing if there's any concentration at all. There seems to be a concentration of UFO reports in the lake and mountain country up there, especially around the White Mountains.
You said a recent sighting wave. Is this actually the case? Has there been a wave of sightings?
There seems to be, ever since the April 24th New Mexico sighting out there at Socorro. And I understand we're going to be hearing the patrolman on phone. But this seemed to start a wave that began out in the west and has moved to the east coast. Now, this is recent around here in New England. In this section of the country.
Streeter, let's move on to Lawrence. We got some calls Friday night about some sightings out there. How vivid were the sightings? How accurate were some of the reports that you got?
Well, evidently, they were very vivid and very exciting. There were a number of adults who made the sightings and a number of young people who knew a lot about astronomy, so that they knew what the stars and the planets looked like on an ordinary night, and on some unusually clear nights, such as we have had recently, they sighted an object in the sky that was described as appearing like a football, being predominantly red in color, but at times changing to other colors, yellow, green, purple, and even white. And the report seemed to agree that this object was rather high in the sky and that it would seem to hover over a particular place, then move and hover over that place, then move to a third place, and sometimes even come back to what appeared to be the original site over which it began to hover. Then it would disappear. And on Saturday night, I was told that it was then visible, so my son and my daughter rushed up to Lawrence and got up there, I think, around 11 o'clock. Unfortunately, by the time they arrived, the thing had disappeared, and I was hoping that I could get some first-hand information from them as to what they thought it might be. And there have been sightings of this one thing on more than one night. And I think
and
this is
rather than new. One person.
Oh, yes, by a group of people, a number of people, and people that lived in different localities in that same area.
Streeter, a little bit later, I'd like to hear the interview that you did with the policeman in New Mexico who saw that object take off from the ground. But before we get into that, in case some of our listeners are certainly not hearing about UFO for the first time, but maybe hearing about it here on Contact, and we always talk about the controversy of UFO. Now, why is this? Why is there this controversy? And I guess it's based around the fact that there seems to be a great difference of opinion between NICAP members and the Air Force. Why do you think there is this difference of opinion? And since we talked about it the last time, has there been any closer meeting of the minds between NICAP and the Air Force?
Well, I think in the first place there is a difference of opinion simply because we are all human beings and each one of us have a different outlook. For example, if I go fishing with you, Bob, and I catch a pretty good-sized fish, the story I'm going to tell about that fish is going to be different from what you're going to tell about it if you didn't catch it and if you come back and report it. I'm probably going to tell you that it was a great big one, and if we're in doubt about it, I'm going to want it to be a rainbow trout, and to you it may be just an ordinary fish, maybe a big sucker or something of the kind. And I think this is one reason you have the differences of opinion. On the other hand, there sometimes is not enough evidence to pinpoint what an object is, and as a result it has to be classified as an unidentified flying object, and the difference of opinion there is on an interpretation of what do you think it might have been. Now, I know that in the world of flying saucers by Dr. Donald Menzel of Harvard University, and incidentally I have attended some of his classes when he discussed unidentified flying objects to
his
students.
He's been a guest on Contact, and the last time we talked about UFO, he was on the telephone. He might be listening again tonight, and before the evening's over, he might be in on the phone again this evening.
Yes, he has written at least two books on unidentified flying objects, specifically on these unidentified flying objects, and the last one is The World of Flying Saucers, and he discusses some of these very controversial cases, and he gives what he considers to be evidence in some of these sightings, but as I read the book, I find that it is very much filled with the word probable and probability or likely. And, for example, when he is discussing the Mantell case, in one place he says that it probably was a giant skyhook balloon, and he seems to give evidence tracing the reports of whatever this object was, which seemed to indicate in parallel the wind currents that would carry one of these giant skyhook balloons along in Kentucky from Ohio. And then in another place in the book, he says if it were not a skyhook balloon, then it was probably they were chasing the planet Venus.
Gentlemen, before we continue along this line, I'll ask one rather basic question, and then we'll talk about the tape that you made with the gentleman in New Mexico, Streeter. Listen to that, and then we'll get up to New York State and hear from that fellow who says he saw little people come out of the ship. Do both of you feel that these sightings, some of them, could be from outer space? Walt?
Well, yes, Bob, after interviewing people, including scientists, I might add, for about 12 years, this is the conclusion I've come to. It's incredible, fantastic, but I do believe that some of these sightings detail viewings of spaceships.
Streeter, how do you feel?
Yes, I believe that there is a possibility that some of these may be from outer space, and I base this on having read very widely as to the possibility of there being hundreds of millions of planets that might be inhabited, similar to our Earth, in the universe. And with all of our advances in space science, if there is life on other planets, as some of our greatest astronomical authorities say there is, very likely, and if their civilization started earlier than ours, there is no doubt that they have advanced beyond us, and so they are not just in the space infancy as we are, and it may be that they have found many forces in the universe that we have not yet even dreamed of, which enable them to come here to the world and to survey it and to contact and to look at it. And for that reason, I believe that some of these may very well be from outer space.
Tonight on Contact, our topic is UFO, unidentified flying objects. Our guests here in the studio, Streeter Stewart and Walter Webb. Streeter, before we play this beeper interview you did with the gentleman in New Mexico, can you give us just a little bit of background for it?
Yes, Bob, I read that there had been a sighting out in New Mexico at a place called Zamora by a policeman. And I was intrigued by the vividness of this account and to the similarity of other accounts that I had read about in books. And I determined that I would have a first-hand report from this man by telephone. I made a long-distance call, and this is what he told me.
And here it is.
I was chasing a reckless driver going up south on Park Street. Up to the time I came to this little road, I heard this big roar blast. We got a dynamite check to the west there. I thought I'd investigate maybe. I thought maybe blowed up. So I started up there real fast. Halfway to it, I stuck my head out the window out of the car, and I seen this white egg object. I didn't know what it was at that time. I thought it was a vehicle that turned over. I started up real fast so I could maybe help the people in the car. I went up to it, close about 200 feet. I was 200 feet from it. I got off the car and started toward it when I heard this big noise again, same noise, and the flame coming from under it. I got scared and started running back. I ran about 50 feet from it. I pulled myself to the ground to hide. Afterwards, I didn't hear the noise no more. I just lifted up my head to see what was happening. And it was real quiet then, and I saw this white object just take off towards the west there, smooth out.
Did it leave any kind of a vapor trail when it took off?
No, sir, it didn't. Just quiet, no trail, no nothing.
But it did make a roar at the time you approached it.
A big roar, yes, sir, it did.
And you could actually see the flame in under it?
Yes, sir, I did.
Was it standing on legs?
Yes, sir, it's legs. I call it legs, yes.
And you thought there were four of these?
Apparently there was on the markings on the ground. It was four legs, yes.
In other words, you examined it later on?
Yes, we did. Me and state police, New Mexico State Police.
After it took off, did you go back to get help?
No, I radioed help from the car and he came on out, yes.
I see. And when you went back to examine it, what did you find near where it had been parked?
Well, the bush. A bush is there around there. Greasewood and grass was still burning. So, I saw this markings on the ground, prints and everything else.
There were prints as if it had been standing on these legs.
Right.
Did the legs go up into the object when it took off? Did you notice that?
No, sir, I didn't notice it was fast.
And after it got into the air, did the roar stop?
Yes, sir, when it came straight up.
There you have an interview with policeman Lonnie Zamora in New Mexico, a gentleman who saw something. Some people call it a UFO. Well, I guess it'd be a UFO one way or the other, wouldn't it, Streeter? It's an unidentified flying object, that is for sure. You know, when I heard about this and read the report, it struck me that could it possibly be a prototype of some sort of a lunar vehicle? Because over at the museum, very often you'll see a show in which they have one of these things on stilts or on legs that would move around the moon. Any possibility it could have been that?
Well, Bob, the description of this would be somewhat similar to the lunar module. And it did have the stilt legs and so on, some of these may have. But I have information from the space agency, and I keep pretty well informed on all of their developments. And this has not been flown yet. It has not been under power at all yet. And I'm sure they wouldn't keep it secret. They have no reason to, because they are informing the public of what they have done and what they are doing in all fields of our attempt to get to the moon. And I just don't believe it was.
Fantastic. We'll be talking about that sighting a little more as the program progresses. But now, I'd like to get to that interview with a 28-year-old dairy farmer from upstate New York. He lives in a town called Newark, New York. And most important of all, he has been rated by his neighbors as quiet, serious, hardworking, and sober. His name is Gary Wilcox, and we caught up with Mr. Wilcox earlier today in his barn. He had an extension phone out there, and you'll notice the mooing in the background. We talked with him and we asked him where he was when he first sighted this UFO.
About 10 o'clock in the morning, I was spreading a load of manure. Found a hayfield up back to barn there, and I kept seeing this glittering thing. It was about a pretty near a mile away, I guess, up on top of the hill. There's nothing in view. I mean, in the way, it's all open ground, and there's an old ice box up there where there's something reflected off from that. It looked just like a mirror shining in my face there, and I was going up the top of that hill to see if it was ready to plow anyway, and I drove on up with the tractor, and as I got up there about 100 feet of this glistening thing, I could see what it was.
What did it look like as you got closer to it?
I got 100, 200 yards from it there, and I couldn't see nothing. There wasn't no shining or nothing, but as I went closer, I got almost within 100 feet before I saw anything.
Mm-hmm.
This is all when it took off, was about 100 feet, and I couldn't see it. It was gone. I mean, but it looked like a wing tank to me at first. I seen them when I was in the service quite a bit, fuel tanks off these planes.
Yeah, so was it then kind of cigar-shaped as these tip tanks are?
It was more egg-shaped than anything. It was about 20 foot long, 15 or 16 foot wide, and about 4 foot deep.
How close did you get to it?
A couple inches. I was touching it for about 2 hours.
What did the surface look like it was made out of?
Aluminum colored, whitish colored. It had a whitish cast to it, but it wasn't bright. It was shiny, but it wasn't real bright. It was just like a dish or some kind of cooking dish, really, about what it was.
Now, did a door open before these people came out of it? How did they appear? How did you meet the little men?
Well, I don't know. I was feeling another thing there, just getting ready to come back down and call the sheriff up and see if something had fallen off an airplane, but I was kind of wondering, too, because it was off the ground. It was about 4 foot off the ground and had this idling noise. And, I don't know, nothing happened. I was touching it there for a couple of minutes, and I was just getting ready to go, and from underneath it someplace, I don't know, these two things or men or whatever they are came. They were about 4 foot high. I don't know what they are or who they were, but they talked to me for about 2 hours up there.
You could perfectly understand them,
yeah,
then.
Yeah, they talk better English than you're talking.
Uh-huh. Did they talk with any kind of an accent?
No accent or nothing. I spoke German and Russian when I was in the service, and were nothing like either one of them.
Mm-hmm. And what did they have to tell you? What were some of the things they said? How did they address you?
First thing they said was, don't be alarmed. We have talked to people before. And they were questioning how I had seen them and stuff. They were quite concerned, said I shouldn't have seen them within 100 feet or so. And then when I told them I saw them way down where I was spreading manure, I was pretty near a mile away, they were quite concerned. They said I shouldn't have seen them in the daytime like that. That's why they lay in the daytime.
Did they tell you what they were doing there?
Well, they said that they were traveling this hemisphere, this trip. Each one had a tray in their hand.
A
full of grass and stuff. It was side looked like they took the knife and cut it right out of the ground, just a slab of it in each tray. And that's what they were doing. They said they were collecting organic material and stuff.
Where did they say they were from?
Well, I mean, this sounds awful silly, I know, but they told me they were from what I know as a planet Mars. Every time they spoke of stuff, they referred to it as I know, or as we know here, like as we know Earth, as we know Mars, and stuff like that.
You sound like you find it rather hard to believe yourself.
Well, I know. I was up there for 2 hours. I was touching the thing and talking to somebody. I don't know who it was.
And you say you talked to them for about 2 hours?
It was probably an hour and a half. I was up there about 2 hours altogether.
Did they mention anything about man's getting into space, sort of coming into their territory?
Well, they talk about a lot of stuff. Some of the stuff I can't say anything about. Some of them I can, but, they was talking about the people were silly to go into space, that they would never survive there, just as they can't survive here, they said. They can only make a trip out every 2 years, the two that were here. That they can't stay in this atmosphere, that Earthmen would have even a harder time than they do, because they were telling me they're much farther advanced in this kind of stuff than we are. But they were more interested in agriculture, aspects of agriculture than anything. They asked me what I was doing about the manure and where I got it and what it did and all that stuff. They didn't know nothing about agriculture. They don't have no organic material or anything like that up there. They said they survive in what they get out of the atmosphere they have.
They
didn't stress any point. They made a lot of statements like that, but they never stressed the point. They didn't say how they lived or anything like that.
Did you say that there were other things they told you that you cannot reveal?
Yeah, I mean...
Why not? Why can't you reveal these other things?
Oh, I guess I better not say anything about it.
Why?
This is being investigated into yet.
Who's investigating it?
Well, it's supposed to be, the Air Force supposed to be coming around, I guess, from what the sheriff says.
You can't tell us what they told you?
No, I shouldn't, for my own personal reasons.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us an indication of what it was? What,
no.
What did it concern?
Well, it concerned them being here more than anything.
Why they were here? Did these creatures have features like we do on Earth? They have eyes?
Well,
and...
they were about 4 foot tall, and they had arms and legs and heads. But where they had features, I would presume so. They just had a complete uniform, covered everything. I mean, as far as seeing features, you couldn't see anything. The voice come from it, from the front one someplace. I don't know. Couldn't say it come from the head, or couldn't say it come from the stomach, or where. It just could hear the voice come from it someplace. He was about 4 or 5 feet away from me.
What color were the uniforms?
Same color as the ship.
Sort of like a spacesuit.
It was the same color. I didn't touch the uniforms, but they looked to me like the same kind of stuff. They seemed to go back underneath the ship. The back one went first, and this front one turned around. They both went back underneath the ship, and where they went to, I don't know. It was only about 60 seconds, and the thing took off. And I was standing about 6 inches from it when it took off.
And there you have, reporting from his barn in Newark, New York, Gary Wilcox, a 28-year-old dairy farmer who says he saw... Well, you heard Mr. Wilcox. And we'll continue our conversation. Our guests here in the studio, Streeter Stewart and Walter Webb, both members of NICAP, will begin taking phone calls in just a moment. As always, our WBZ contact number is Algonquin 45678. And a quick reminder, tomorrow night on Contact, our topic is going to be the John Birch Society. That first phone call in just a moment. Gentlemen, let's take that first phone call. Our topic tonight, UFO, unidentified flying objects. My guest, Streeter Stewart, and Walter Webb. This is Bob Kennedy. You're on contact. You're on the air.
Yes, Mr. Kennedy.
Yes.
This is Robert Forrest, and I will have three brief points.
Okay, make them kind of brief. We're pushing for time here, Robert.
All right. I was wondering if your guests, either of them, were familiar with the two strange objects which have been seen in the western skies for the past week, or 2 weeks, rather.
Mm-hmm.
The brief description of their nature would be they were... Basically, pure lights with green towards the end, as if possibly they're at an angle, and a red flash at intervals going over their surface. They appeared to be stars at first glance, but they're constantly in the sky.
Would this be the ones that similar to the ones over Lawrence, Streeter, that we were talking about earlier?
No, I think not. The ones over Lawrence appeared to be a red ball.
Mm-hmm.
Well, these were... excuse me, in what direction were those objects seen?
Just a few degrees to the left of Venus the first time, and the other times, basically they were constantly to the left of Venus, and then the last time I saw them, which was a few nights back, they had changed their position entirely and were about 50 degrees to the right of Venus.
Mm-hmm. Were they star-like pinpoint lights?
They seemed to be,
but
I checked and there was no temperature inversion which could have caused it. There was a brief temperature inversion on a few nights, but it was nothing recognizable.
Well, the planet Venus would be the only planet, bright object in that part of the sky. Jupiter has long since disappeared. For a while, Jupiter and Venus were close together. Could be, though, that I believe there are some other stars over in that area. Now, you know, when they're low to the horizon, they scintillate or refract.
Yes. Well, the only thing that would have killed that theory is the fact that these moved in a contrary direction to the stars.
Well, I'm baffled then.
Why don't you give them a call after the program? Let them know more detail, and I'm sure they'd both be very interested.
All right, and my other 2 points,
are,
once again, very brief. We are setting up a sky watch here in Cambridge, and I thought that any of your listeners, which might be interested in joining, could write me at 92 Pleasant Street, Cambridge.
All right, good.
And the third thing, which is once again very brief, there's a fellow out in Worcester who puts out a very excellent amateur publication, which is nonprofit. Called Controversial Phenomena Bulletin, which is a saucer magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And his address would be 42 Great Brook Valley Avenue.
Okay,
Mass.
All right, we'll send you the bill to 92 Pleasant Street.
Okay,
thank you so much for calling. This is Bob Kennedy. You're in contact. You're on the air now. Hello?
Yes, hello.
Yes, sir.
Yes, to any one of your guests, I'd like to have this question answered.
All right.
I was wondering, it mentioned that some scientists believe that there is life on other planets beyond ours or other bodies or what have you. So I was wondering, recent evidences do they have, if any, to, you know, base this upon? And then again, why is it that some scientists, would tend to be skeptical about it, and even some tend to disagree?
All right, sir. Fine. Thank you.
Well, I'll try to answer that briefly. In the first place, they have discovered some tektites, which are a kind of a meteorite material that appear to have some fossils of elementary life in them. This would indicate that there is some kind of life in outer space, because these are coming from someplace other than the Earth. The second reason is that in biology and the other sciences, science has pretty well concluded now that wherever there is an atmosphere, an environment propitious to life, life will develop. And there are undoubtedly many, many planets near a heat and energy source such as our sun that would be propitious for such life. Therefore, these scientists conclude that life must have developed in that area.
This is Bob Kennedy. You're in contact. You're on the air now.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, according to the Black Muslims, they claim that there is a ship up in the sky, and it's for the purpose of destroying this country. And they claim that there are 1,500 bombing planes on that ship for the purpose of destroying the metropolitan areas of this country.
Yes.
And I did hear of a fellow that claimed that he saw some of these ships in Texas in 1958. I heard it over the radio when it was announced, and he said that he talked with three of the individuals on this particular ship, and he said they were black, and he said they were the blackest things he'd ever seen in his life.
Mm-hmm.
And he claimed that he talked to them, and they spoke English to him, and they talked another language to themselves, but he said primarily the same thing that this man just said from New Mexico, that they got back in the ship. He said where the door was closed, it was so smooth as if it was no hinges, prove the mathematical ability of these people.
Now, when you say they were black men, do you mean this literally, or do you mean that they were Negro gentlemen up there?
Well, he said black. No. I think Major Keogh also said that when he was flying a plane, or if it wasn't him, it was another pilot coming from South America. He claimed that it flew alongside of his plane, and they said that they were black people. And when I say black, I mean B-L-A-C-K.
Yeah.
That's what they came. This particular gentleman in Texas that I heard over the radio in 58, he said that where they got back in the ship, he said the mathematical mind of these people must have been so high, because where the door closed, you couldn't even see a normal hinge like we see on our door. And he said that took off faster than anything else that he had ever seen in his life. It went straight up, made a 90-degree turn without stopping.
Well, the late Douglas MacArthur, the general of the armies, is quoted as saying, and I have a tape in which he is quoted as saying, that he believed that the next major war would be an interplanetary war.
Amazing. With people from other planets, or did he mean that we would, Earth people would manage to get on the planets and then begin fighting that way?
No, that this would be a war similar to the War of Worlds, in which the people of this Earth would war against people from other planets.
Well, we'll be able to put that question directly to Major Kehoe shortly after news. We'll ask him about those black men on the flying saucers, and one evening during a discussion with Malcolm X, when he was a member of the Black Muslims, we were talking about this, and the telephone call came in, and someone asked specifically about it, and I was amazed when Malcolm X agreed, yes, that there was, they felt, a saucer up there with black men on it, waiting possibly to attack the Earth. So it is part of the Black Muslim tradition. And it's something that we'll be talking about right after news as we continue our discussion tonight on UFO, Unidentified Flying Objects. Our WBZ number, as always, is Algonquin 45678. Again, this is Bob Kennedy standing by to put you in contact with the exciting world of people, places, and ideas on Bob Kennedy Contact. We'll continue our conversation and take another phone call in just a moment. Tonight on Contact, our topic is UFO, Unidentified Flying Objects. When I began the program, Streeter was coming over from the news studio. You probably didn't hear this, but I was saying, Streeter, that this is probably, I would imagine, our most controversial topic that we deal with on Contact by virtue of the reaction that we get to the programs afterwards. The mail is always very, very heavy, and the phones are about ready to burn to the ground every time we do it, as it has been tonight with the lights lighting up. Our guest here in the studio, of course, Streeter Stewart. Streeter from WBZ News, also a member of NICAP, and Walter Webb with us. Walter's been with us before. Walt, too, a member of NICAP. And now on our long-distance contact line from his home, we have Major Donald Kehoe, who is the director of NICAP. Major Kehoe, welcome to Contact.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Now, Major, I know that both Streeter and Walt have a question for you, and then we'll let our listeners join us in. As I said just a second ago, our lines have been quite busy tonight. But Walt mentioned something in the beginning of the program that I think I'd ask your reaction to. He said that we're in the midst of sort of a rash of UFO sightings across the country that began in April, sort of in the Midwest, and is moving now seemingly along the lines towards New England here. Do you think that we are in the middle of a particularly active UFO sighting period?
Yes, actually, there's been a very noticeable increase. Not only that, there are many people who ordinarily keep silent who are encouraged now to speak up because of all these press reports.
What kind of people would these be, Major?
Well, they're a respectable businessman and men in the military services, congressmen, so on. We've had a number of reports of people who said, ordinarily I would keep this confidential, but it seems to be breaking out now.
Any particular congressmen you'd like to name who have become...
No, that's one thing. They have given us those reports. I tell you, I think some of them will. When our report on our seven-year investigation reaches Congress and then is released to the press, I think you'll be surprised at a number on the Hill who will come out and say, we believe that these things are real and we have known it for quite some time.
When are you going to get this report to Congress?
It's in the last stages of printing, and we're trying to rush it through so that it will be, it should be to Congress in the first part of June.
And what do you hope the result of this will be, aside from some statements from people on the Hill, the result of this report?
Well, first of all, we think there will be a congressional investigation because there are a number of senators and congressmen who've already said that they will back such a move. Second, when the press and all the broadcast newsmen around the country realize that this massive evidence is on record and realize they've been misled, perhaps not deliberately, but they have been led to believe there was nothing to it. And here are all these hundreds of reports from veteran observers, pilots and missile trackers and astronomers and so forth. It's going to be revolutionary, and I think this is the year for the UFO problem. It's going to break out.
Streeter, do you have a question?
Walter wanted to ask some more, I think, about this congressional...
Yes, Major, I'd like to cut in here a moment. Tell me, has the Air Force explained the Socorro, New Mexico case at all? I have not seen anything on this in the papers.
Not to date, as far as I know. They admitted to their chief investigator, Dr. Heining, admitted they were puzzled, and apparently he stands up in the community as a very reputable person. They also did find marks on the ground. Apparently something did land there, and it could not have been any one of our secret devices. They don't test them in that way. They test them on the proving ground.
And I remember right in the beginning there when the UFO investigators, the Air Force people, were coming out, they said that it was not a secret aircraft that was being tested around that area.
That's right.
And also they witnessed the patrolman was considered to be very, very reliable.
That's right.
Major Kehoe, I was sitting here thinking about the results of this investigation if Congress does investigate UFO, and if there is more public interest, do you think, now again with a supposition on my part anyway, perhaps not on yours, if there were these people, beings from outer space that were surveying our planet, and if as a result of the congressional investigation, UFO, the public's interest in UFO increased, if there was more of an open-minded attitude toward UFO in this country, do you think then it might perhaps prompt these beings to be less Candleston in their appearances here on Earth? Do you think they might make their appearances known more readily?
Well, I think it might for this reason. If there were a change in policy so that every time one of these appears, the jet interceptors don't take off and try to shoot one down or bring it down quickly for examination, that alone should encourage them to try a tentative landing here and there, instead of with these very brief ones where they land and are ready to go in a hurry if anybody comes near.
Major Kehoe, I wanted to ask, is there still a policy of secrecy on the part of the Air Force as far as giving out information to the public is concerned? My experience has been that they want to get information, but they don't want to give information. What is the situation now?
Well, that is correct. Under Air Force Regulation 200, all Air Force personnel are prohibited from giving out any information on their sightings unless it is approved at Air Force headquarters. And all they put out at headquarters, as a rule, is very vague summaries, percentages, and so forth. When a specific case breaks, like this one in New Mexico, they're almost forced to say something. But as a rule, you never hear anything of all of the jet chases of UFOs and the formations that are sighted from military air bases and so on.
Major Kehoe, Streeter, and Walt, I'd like to continue this conversation, but so would our listeners, so let's get to some phone calls. Our number, as always, is Algonquin 45678, and we'll take that next phone call right after this message. Once again, my guests in the studio, Streeter Stewart, Walter Webb from NICAP on our long-distance contact line, the head of NICAP, the director, Major Donald Kehoe, from his home in Virginia. Gentlemen, let's take that next phone call. This is Bob Kennedy. You're in contact now. You're on the air.
Oh, Bob Kennedy?
Yes, sir.
Bob, I don't want to take too much of your airtime this evening, but I've been interested in UFO for a long time, and these always seem to come out after one, spectacular sighting such as the one down in New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd like to ask Major Kehoe a question or two here and then relate an experience that I had briefly.
Well, how about relating the experience first? Technically, it will be easier for us, and then ask the two questions together.
All right,
together.
Fine.
Okay.
The experience was one that I had that is tied up with this question of sightings in rather barren, isolated areas that I had this summer in west-central Nebraska in the Sand Hills region. Which are quite common out there. The ranchers have reported them a number of times to me. I was doing some survey work out there. And to them, it's very common stuff. They're country folk, live off the land, and they don't think much about it. But
what are the sightings like?
The sighting that I was particularly involved with was a sighting of 103 of these very bright egg-shaped things that were out in this around this lake this past July 3rd. They've had numbers of them on this particular lake in the Sand Hills region, cattle country, before, but I happened to stop by this ranch on my survey and had this man report to me that both he and his mother, an elderly lady, this past July 3rd had an encounter with 103 of these things that they counted around their lake in front of their ranch. They fired guns at them. They got about 200 yards away, and these things took off. He's had experiences with two or three of them before, never with any people. They've landed. They seem to be in congregations out there, 40 miles from the nearest town.
And you saw them, you say?
I did not see them, no. This was given to me by these people in the course of the survey, but there was continual backing up of many, many different reports of people who said this was just common stuff in this region where there are no concentrations of people.
Well, let's see if our guests are familiar with that. What are the two questions you have?
Well, the two questions was one about this. Is there a correlation in the survey reports with sightings in rather desolate areas? And the second one is the fact, has anyone overheard any conversations among people who seem to be agents in this flying saucer program, such as one that another friend of mine had in Chicago two summers ago, working in an office building? Overhearing in the next office what, to all intents and purposes, was a report from a man here on Earth, dressed like an Earth person, looking like a human being, to another man in this office. They did not know he was in the next office cleaning.
Do you mean these supposedly are you know, like agents from outer space that are working at this office?
I don't like to say this because it sounds so funny. And sounds
well, we've had one fellow on the program that swears there's one in the Pentagon, George King. So.
I don't... I'm not familiar with that, and I am still somewhat skeptical, but I'm very interested in this.
He
said that he, being a skeptic like myself, said it was the most fantastic thing he'd ever heard. A report from a man saying to this other higher-up, be it, I'm reporting back from the Middle Western area here that he was assigned a particular geographical area to more or less live and move in and report on the activities of Earth.
Okay, now your first question was a correlation with sightings in desolate areas. In other words,
desolate, remote areas, New Mexico, Middle West Plains, etc. Is there a correlation? The second one, have there been similar occasions of people meeting or overhearing?
Okay, fine. Thank you so much. Major Kehoe, did you hear those?
The last question, the last part of that, I didn't hear clearly.
Yeah. Well, the last question was, he overheard two gentlemen talking, and they seemed to be agents from space, and he wondered if you had heard anything about this.
There's a last sentence there that I wasn't sure about. The first question, the correlation about landings and operations in desolate areas, there have been, I think, more reports of touch landings, naturally, out in the more barren areas, and they would be close to a city. And that reason is rather obvious, since, as I say, they get chased quite frequently. Incidentally, this gentleman reported people firing at the UFOs, and I would suggest that anyone who sees one of these don't not fire at all, but wait and see what happens. That's one reason why they don't apparently want to land and stay on the ground. The second one, I think There is no proof of that at all. We've heard that story many, many times, and it may be true. But at the same time, I would have to have a lot more evidence before I would accept it that we have such agents moving around on Earth.
Good. All right, gentlemen, let's take another call. Bob Kennedy, you're in contact. You're on the air.
Hello, Bob.
Yes.
This is Mrs. Herman of West Roxbury calling.
Yes.
I was looking at Venus about a couple of nights ago.
Uh-huh.
And I saw very three little green dots moving very fast. And I called the authorities to find out if they had seen them. And I was wondering what they were. They said it was nothing. It was probably just my eyesight.
Uh-huh. Green dots on Venus. Did you check it? You wear glasses?
Yes.
You weren't doing some painting, any green painting that day, were you? You weren't painting the screens. Okay, we'll see. Walt Webb might have something on that. Thank you for calling.
Okay, I guess I missed her. I was hoping to get her on the line. But she said three little green dots.
Right.
Again, I would have asked her what direction in the sky. I guess she said near Venus, didn't she? And also, how long did she see them, for example? Now, it could have been plane lights, green.
Have there been any reports of anything
probably
like
that? Probably not satellites.
Mm-hmm.
No, not lately.
All right. Fine, we'll take another phone call in just a moment, but first we'll check the baseball scoreboard.
Hello, Bob. This is Bruce Hemian of
yes.
Framingham.
Okay, Bruce, how are you?
That's good.
Fine.
And I have a little something I think your guest should know, that a little sighting that I saw around a year or two ago. That it was around where I live, and my father and I were driving in the car, and we happened to look out, and we saw this big large ball, and it was completely white, and it kept blinking on and off, and the intervals between were 4 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And then a month later we saw the same thing, and it, around the same area, and it occurred, it had the same actions as it did the sighting we saw a month before.
Whereabouts did you see it?
Well, around the Pleasant Street and down near First Baptist Church.
This out in Framingham?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it, I think the size of it was about the size of a car, I think it would be. But it didn't look like a plane or anything, but just thing that you guess should know about it.
All right, fine.
And I have a little question, too.
All right.
And for your guest. Around 10 or 11 years ago, there was a several sightings over Washington, D.C. And I was wondering if that was true or false.
All right, I think we'll ask Major Kehoe on that one, since that's right down in his home territory. Major Kehoe, do you hear that question?
That wasn't coming through very clearly, Bob. I'm sorry.
Well, that's okay. The question was, the general was concerned about some sightings over Washington a couple of years ago, and he wonders if there is any truth to that. Were there some sightings?
Major, these are the ones in 1952, Washington radar.
Well, the 52 sightings, of course, are well documented. There were formations of UFOs, groups operating over Washington that were tracked for radar and seen visually from the towers, tower operators, plane pilots, and so on. Recently, there have been a few sightings over Washington, some of which have been revealed, and most of them are kept under wraps.
Nice. Let's take another phone call, then. This is Bob Kennedy. You're in contact. You're on the air now. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, ma'am.
This is Lyle Boyd. I'm a co-author with Dr. Menzel of The World of Flying Saucers.
Glad to have you join us.
Dr. Menzel, unfortunately, is in South America, so he can't call up to comment, so I thought I would like to.
Please?
In the first place, Mr. Webb and Mr. Stewart made some criticism of our book, saying that we continually use the word probably in giving our solution. And I would like to comment that this is the only thing a scientist can say when an event happened many years before and he doesn't have access to all the material. He can have an excellent theory, but he can't prove it, and he'd be very foolish to say certainly. And the whole thing, it seems to me, about the UFO belief is that they also are depending on probability, but they have no evidence at all, and they treat probability as though it were fact. The fact is, we have no evidence at all that we've had visitors from outer space. No ship has ever landed, been photographed, We've never found any wreckage. We've never found any bones of these little men. We have no evidence. And it seems to me so foolish for a person to believe these things until he can have some proof. And Dr. Menzel and I, in our book, we're trying to treat the thing reasonably and to say that these things happen. You do have these peculiar circumstances, but they're a question of interpretation. But you can't find a positive verdict either way until you have all the facts.
The students in Dr. Menzel's class, on the times that I attended his class when he was speaking on unidentified flying objects, criticized Dr. Menzel for not having a scientific attitude. Now, I know that he is one of the world's great scientists, but when it comes to the unidentified flying objects, he does say that he believes that he can explain all of these on a basis of natural phenomena. And the students who had had sightings of their own, to have these dismissed by Dr. Menzel as saying, well, it was probably a workman's lunch bag that was flying through the air, or it was probably a spider web, when they knew they had not seen a workman's lunch bag or a spider web, made them make these statements that his approach was not a scientific one.
Well, I'm afraid he may have been being facetious. If you had caught him in a serious mood, he would have considered the facts very seriously and tried to find a reasonable explanation. But even then, he would have said, probably.
Yes, well, I did. I recorded Dr. Menzel on both of these. I have 2 hours of recording, and I even gave him a duplicate copy of the recordings that I made. Now, I know that he is very sincere, and he believes that all of these can be explained on a basis of natural phenomena, and he gives some very, it seems to me, some very plausible explanations. But I do feel that there is enough evidence, thousands of these sightings that have been made by people who I think some are just as capable of making observations as Dr. Menzel, also of drawing conclusions. And therefore, I would have to conclude that there is a probability that some of these cannot be explained on a basis of natural phenomena.
I think we simply don't know all the answers.
But you, the point that strikes me is that you say there is no evidence at all. And my guests this evening say that there is some evidence, in fact, a good deal of evidence. So here are two very, very separate opinions. There's no shading on either side, it seems to me. And one does wonder, well, here we go. One side says no evidence, the other side says
what. It's a question of what you define as evidence. That's basic. Well, thanks very much.
Well, what is your definition of evidence? I think that would be most important, so...
Well, primarily something you can weigh, measure, or photograph.
Well, there have been people who have submitted photographs which were some people consider to be authentic. I know that others say that they have been falsified and they have ridiculed them. There have also been some metals that have been tested and assayed, and this I consider to be evidence, and I believe that if you will consider this to be evidence, that there is some evidence. Now, to be able to prove that this was from a spaceship that was from outer space, that would take some doing.
Well,
I would admit that.
Mrs. Boyd, this is Walter Webb here.
Yes.
I wanted to just make a comment on the book. I think you and Dr. Menzel have done a good job in explaining away the lights. I think many of those do turn out to be stars and planets. But the theories begin to be a little stretched out, a little far-fetched, it seems to me, when you get objects that are large and seen at close range. Now, this is where I think you and Dr. Menzel have maybe gone a little astray.
What in particular?
Well, I can't think of any offhand, but there were some, let's see, there was the French angel hair cases. Remember that?
Yes.
And I think I commented on this in a letter to Dr. Menzel. But he left out, left out a complete description of the objects that were seen. Now, I don't know why he did this, unless it was to sort of make it a little easier to fit his theory.
Oh, no. It must have been some kind of oversight. Maybe we didn't have the evidence. I don't know. I don't recall the details. Come around to the observatory sometime. Let's talk it over.
Okay.
Good. I'm glad to see we at least our guests are talking it over. Thank you so much for calling us tonight, Mrs. Boyd. Nice having you on our program. Our number is Algonquin 45678, and the controversy wages on. Gentlemen, let's take another phone call. This is Bob Kennedy. You're in contact. You're on the air.
Hello, Mr. Kennedy.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm enjoying your program immensely.
Why, thank you so much.
I just want to say that last summer, my husband and I, we live in East Boston, we saw five of something. We weren't sure what it was. And they flew over the airport real fast. And I was wondering, doesn't radar spot these things?
Good question. Thank you for calling. Let's check with Major Kehoe down there in Virginia. Major, what about radar spotting UFO?
There have been hundreds of cases, Bob, where radar has not only tracked UFOs singly and in formation, but has shown them maneuvering, and these UFOs have been simultaneously confirmed visually by observers on the ground at airports, in towers, and in airplanes in the area. Now, the odd part about this is that many times people think a radar can be at fault, but when you have an absolute instantaneous confirmation, and when more than one radar set triangulates, helps to triangulate a position, and shows these things exactly where they're seen visually, there isn't any question about it. There's something solid was seen, because the mirage answer will not explain away such triangulation.
Now, by triangulate, you mean two radars that separate the spots,
that's right,
record something,
more,
and they cross?
Two or more radars.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's one interesting thing about this. Air Force Regulation 200-2 has a provision in there for classifying as either confidential or secret radar scope photos which show UFOs. Now, those things, as soon as they take the photographs of the radar scope, which shows these things maneuvering or following various patterns, they are classified. You can't get them. And there have been many of these taken. The Air Force has many of them in their files. And that's one of the bits of evidence to which Mrs. Boyd apparently was not, she wasn't allowed to see in documental either. Many of those things are under wraps, and people come in and ask about them, and they politely say, I'm sorry, that's not available.
Our contact guest tonight here in the studio, Streeter Stewart Wald Webb, on our long-distance line from Virginia, Major Donald Kehoe, and we'll be back with more phone calls in just a moment. In vicinity, clear and cool tonight with low readings in the mid-40s inland and in the upper 30s along the coast. Tomorrow's going to be partly cloudy with a chance of scattered showers by evening, highest temperatures again in the 70s, winds picking up to southwest 15 to 20 miles an hour, and the present WBZ temperature is 73 degrees. Say, how long has it been since you rode a cable car in San Francisco? Well, you know, that's just one of the memorable things that you can do on a Western adventure vacation with TWA. You can visit exciting Disneyland, sit around a campfire at night out in the desert, and share the fun in Las Vegas. When you fly TWA, you're on vacation the same day your vacation begins, because TWA jets take you to California in just a few short hours. And you can see a brand new movie on the way by in-flight motion pictures in either first class or coach. The cost of your vacation in the West is less than you may think, especially when you travel on TWA's family travel plan. On certain days of the week, you can save 25% of each fare for your wife and children in low-cost jet coach as well as in first class. Make this your year for a wonderful vacation in California and the West. For free TWA vacation literature, call TWA, see your travel agent, or write to TWA Adventures, Box 103, Boston 34. A quick reminder, tomorrow night on Contact, we'll be talking about the John Birch Society. We'll be talking about it with a gentleman who has just published a book on this organization called The John Birch Society, Anatomy of Protest. His name is J. Allen Broyles, our contact guest tomorrow night at 6:30. This is Bob Kennedy. You're in contact now. You're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Bob.
Yes, sir.
I've got three very quick questions for Major Kehoe.
Okay, and then at this point, I'm going to limit the questions from here on out to only two, because we have so many phone calls, we'll never get to them. So if you can give us the three quick questions, sir, and we'll have the Major answer.
All right, fine. Mr. Cedric Ailingham and Mr. George Adamski, two fairly well-known amateur astronomers.
Are either of these fellows, well, I guess amateur astronomers make some astronomers in a way. I suppose anyone can be an amateur astronomer.
As long as they have a telescope in the backyard.
All you need is a telescope. Okay, well, we just wanted to clear up, because Mr. Adamski's the fellow that, you know, takes weekend flights in flying saucers, et cetera, right?
Right. Both these people have supposedly spoken and filmed people from Mars and Venus.
Mm-hmm.
And my first question is whether or not any of these photographs have ever been found to be authentic.
All right.
Question number two, in Major Kehoe's last book, which was The Flying Saucer Conspiracy, he mentioned that in the 1950s, a bridge on the moon had been discovered, which they had called the Moon Bridge. Mm-hmm. My second question was if there has been any further information or investigation on this bridge.
All right, sir.
And the third quick question, is there any organization that the average citizen like myself could join to receive more information on the UFOs?
Join NICAP.
NICAP.
As simple as that. Sure, you can join the organization that all of our guests this evening are members of. NICAP, National Investigation Committee on Aerial Phenomenon, and we'll give you the address once we talk with Major Keogh again. Major?
Yes.
All right.
The first two gentlemen named are pretty well known to us. I'm sorry, but we simply cannot accept their reports. Mr. Allingham's report has never been documented. Mr. Adamski, in a number of cases, have made reports which we have found to be contrary to fact. As far as the photographs are concerned, the Allingham photo is so dim, and it merely shows supposedly the back of a man from some other world walking away from the camera. Well, it could be the back of anyone, as far as that's concerned. Now, the Adamski photos, which are supposed to be of various types of spaceships, have been examined by very careful photographers and experts in this field, and none of them have accepted them. Now, one of these is Mr. Frank Edwards, the noted TV commentator, and he, on the air, told Mr. Adamski that the pictures were fakes and that he would be glad to have him sue him at any time for saying so, and nobody has come forth with any suits.
Mm-hmm. No.
And the matter, aside from that angle, I don't think that you can accept evidence of this kind. It's simply not backed up. The films don't stand up. Now, the second question about the moon bridge, that was given to us by a British astronomer, an expert on the moon, the sighting of a strange structure or something up there which appeared like a bridge crossing this area was confirmed in this country by a number of astronomers, most of them known as amateurs, which means they may have been astronomers for 30 years, but they don't get paid for it. Most of the government agencies have denied that there is any such structure there, but something or other had appeared in that area. The third question, anyone who is interested in obtaining information, particularly in regard to this 7-year report which we are about to put out, can get this by writing to NICAP, N-I-C-A-P, that's the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena,
mm-hmm.
Short, N-I-C-A-P, 1536 Connecticut Avenue, Washington, D.C. This is an organization of citizens all over the country and in about 25 foreign countries. Scientists, military men, pilots, astronomers, observers, people in all types of professions and trades and so on. And it's headed by a board of governors, some rear admirals, colonels, and so forth on down, scientists, technicians. When I said on down, I wasn't downgrading people who aren't up to the rank of rear admiral. And they examine these cases, and these things are analyzed, cases and reports from veteran observers, and you finally reach a conclusion. The conclusion by the majority of the board has been so far, these objects are real and under intelligent control. And some very amazing information will come out in this report within the next few weeks. Because again, anyone who's interested, or anyone who has a sighting report that he has been keeping under wraps, we would like very much to have at this same address.
All right. Our WBZ contact number is Algonquin 45678. And just a quick reminder that this portion of contact is being brought to you in cooperation with Boston University. Let's take another phone call. Bob Kennedy, you're in contact. You're on the air.
This is Nelson Hayes. Unlike Mrs. Boyd, I am somewhat less charitable in my view of the possibility that all of these sightings can be explained as natural phenomena. Specifically, I'm concerned about, and this is what I'd like your guest to comment on, the number of people, and I wouldn't attempt to name them, who have, in one way or another, profited through publicity or through money by publicizing the existence of flying saucers. There is, for example, one man who publishes a magazine exclusively devoted to this, and he makes a living from it. And I'm reminded of other frauds and fallacies such as the Cardiff Giant or Ron Hubbard's Dianetics, various misbeliefs, misconceptions that have been foisted on the public for, as I say, publicity and profit.
The fact that a man publishes a magazine for profit concerning a certain field certainly should not condemn him for doing that. We have hundreds of scientific publications that are published for profit, and they do deal with scientific subjects. Can you condemn those people because they are making money from it, simply because they are dealing with a scientific subject? Do you condemn this one man for the same reason, that he's publishing it for profit? Should he do it for non-profit?
No, of course not. If I'm being allowed now to answer this question. In this case, however, the individual involved had been a publisher of a science fiction magazine. He rode to death a story based on material supposedly supplied to him by someone concerning the existence of a lost civilization.
Mrs. Lyle Boyd herself is a science fiction writer, and she has published this book. No doubt it was published for profit, not just to make a declaration of what they believe. And I'm sure, I at least hope that they are making a profit. It's an interesting book, and I think it should be read. Are you going to condemn her because she wants to make a profit from her activity?
No, let's get this clear. I am talking about people who essentially either make a living from this.
Right. I'm sure that Mrs. Boyd has made a living from her science fiction writing.
Well, I'm sure, as a matter of fact, she hasn't. That is neither here nor there.
Well, I think she's living, and I have met her, and she seemed to be living fairly well from all I could see.
And science fiction writing for Mrs. Boyd is an avocation. It certainly is not her vocation. But this is not the point I'm trying to make. The point I'm trying to make is the desire, obviously, of many people to publicize supposed sightings for the purpose of getting their names in the paper, or for getting on the radio or on television.
If they're in the business of publication, or if they are in the business of publishing, then it seems to me that that is their business. If they were to turn down the sightings, they would be very foolish. They would be, it seems to me, plain idiots.
Well, what I'm trying to open here is the question as to whether any of these people who supposedly have seen flying saucers are deliberately fabricating. I think this is an essential question.
Well, there are hundreds of thousands of documented sightings that have been reported, and tens of thousands, I would say, that have been investigated. And there must be a lot of crackpots in the world if all of these people are making these just for fraud or for publicity's sake. I can't believe that there are that many crazy people in the world who are out in the streets. Now, if these were coming from institutions, I would understand it more easily. But it seems to me that these people are simply revealing what they have seen. And for every person who is making a profit from it, I would say that you could find 1,000 sightings and publications of sightings where the person is making no profit, has nothing whatsoever to gain from it.
But I think the gentleman's point was not that necessarily all of these people were in it for the sheer profit, but that there would possibly be a percentage of people who were continuing to keep UFO before the public because it did give them a rather lucrative livelihood.
Well, the UFO subject is before the public, and they're not trying to keep it before the public. They're simply trying to reflect a situation that exists, and it seems to me they're doing that in the same way that a scientific publication or a biological publication or a medical publication or a news publication keeps the news before the public, or keeps the subject that they are interested in before the public.
Gentlemen, we'll continue our discussion in just a moment. Our numbers, Algonquin 45678. A quick reminder, this Thursday night on Contact, we're going to be talking about the activity in Cuba, the activity that is supposed to be coming up this week, the activity that has already taken place, but the increased activity that will be taking place as of Wednesday. We'll be talking about that with two gentlemen from Alpha 66. That'll be coming up Thursday night on Contact. Our next phone call in just a moment, but if you're planning a trip to the fabulous New York World's Fair, well, have you tried making hotel reservations? It's a fact that many who have tried are finding it difficult to be guaranteed reservations. Now, here's a suggestion with a guarantee. World's Fair Tours Incorporated offers an all-expense package plan, weekend tours that you just cannot match yourself. Think of it. Round-trip rail transportation from Boston, two nights at the air-conditioned Hotel New Yorker, transportation to the fair, two admissions to the fair, an hour-and-a-half glass-topped bus tour of the fair, a thrilling monorail ride, baggage gratuities, and taxes. Yes, a full, delightful weekend at the fair, and this complete package costs just $45 per person.
Not only is this $45 lower than you could arrange for yourself, but this is the way to be certain of hotel reservations. You can reserve right now for the May 15th and May 29th weekend by calling Hubbard 20060. That's Hubbard 20060. Operators are waiting for your call. For full information, without obligation, call Hubbard 20060 or write for a free brochure describing the special World's Fair package tour for just $45 to Box 103, Boston 34, Massachusetts. Remember, you can call for reservations on the May 29th weekend, and there'll be other weekends coming up throughout the summer. So you call for information, the number Hubbard 20060 or write Box 103, Boston 34. This is Bob Kennedy. You're on contact now. You're on the air.
Hello, Bob. I'd like to ask two questions.
Yes, sir.
The first one is, do the jets that try to intercept these unidentified flying objects, are they specially equipped with cameras or anything like that?
All right, sir. What's your other question?
And second of all, does the government itself, not the Air Force, employ people to cover the world and find out information about any sightings or anything?
All right, fine. Thank you so much for calling. Major Kehoe.
Well, the first question about jets... Some of them have gun cameras. Not all jet interceptors have that equipment, but many of them do, and a number of them have been able to take pictures of objects they were pursuing. Those with any detail have not been released. We have seen several that show a round object at some distance ahead of the jets. The second question, the Air Force is assigned the responsibility of investigating UFOs. However, according to Major C.R. Hart, who was the spokesman on UFOs some time ago, about a year ago, the Air Force employs the services of scientists in many government agencies. It has access to all laboratories, for example, for evaluating material and analyzing it. It uses the FBI to check up on people, find out whether they're reputable witnesses and so on. So you could say that there are thousands of people in the United States government who do take a part in this UFO investigation.
All right, this is Bob Kennedy. You're in contact. You're on the air.
Thank you. I'd like to ask Mr. Webb this question, if I may.
Sure.
Could you tell me if, during our lifetime, that we will ever witness a large-scale meeting of these, of our own human beings with these outer-space creatures?
All right, Walter.
Well, I suppose it's possible if you go along with the theory that they're interplanetary or interstellar spacecraft. Perhaps from the looks of it now, they seem to be landing when they land, sort of in out-of-the-way places, with the purpose of not having open contact with us. Perhaps they're waiting until we can meet them on their own level. We certainly have a long way to go. We haven't even achieved a trip to the moon. Now, perhaps they might extend the hand of greeting out to us after we have proven that we can land on another object in space. It might not even be the moon. It might have to be the planet Mars, let's say. And then we can perhaps show that we can do this in peace. Perhaps then they might want to contact us.
Do you feel this will happen in your lifetime?
Well, that's a good question. I really don't know. I think a lot of it has to do with how our government and the governments of the world treat them. As we've all pointed out here tonight, we seem to give every intention of hostile activity ourselves.
If these creatures do exist, and if they do come from outer space, now this man from New York State said that they were taking samplings of the Earth. M.A. Michel, in his book called Flying Saucers and the Straight Line Mystery, made a study of the sightings that had been made in Europe, particularly in France. And he discovered that when there was a sighting at one place in France, usually the same day or very shortly thereafter, oftentimes the same day, there would be a sighting in various parts of France. And if you drew a line from the place where the sighting was reported in one area to the sighting in another, you would find that it made a straight line right across France and part of Europe. And then a very interesting part of his theory is that when there would be a group of sightings again, that the group of sightings, when they were lined up, the second group of sightings would intercept the first group of sightings, so that there was an actual intersection of those two, which would seem to indicate that they were making a survey of the Earth. And it could be that they are trying to find out things about the Earth and observing and do not want to make too much of a contact with us until they know whether or not we are going to be hostile to them, because I believe that they have been fired on at times and they have been chased, and if they exist and if they are intelligent, certainly they want to know more about us before they contact us in such a way that would be a danger for them.
This is Bob Kennedy. You're in contact. You're on the air. Hello?
Hello.
Yes.
I have a bulletin in front of me from NICAP. I'm a NICAP member.
All right.
And it says that ABC TV is planning a national series of feature programs on UFOs and has requested NICAP's help. Now, I was wondering, it just tells vaguely here what the date of this program will be. And I was wondering if Major Kehoe could kind of fill me in on who's sponsoring this and what the more definite date will be.
All right, sir. Fine. Major Kehoe?
Well, it isn't completely worked out. ABC asked us if we would cooperate, and we said we certainly would with them or any other network or any independent station. They said they would start the series as quickly as possible. They're working on it. They're getting a lot of information. And as soon as possible, I will have them make an announcement of the date ahead of time. But I don't think it'll be within the next 2 weeks. It'll probably be sometime after that.
Gentlemen, we'll continue our discussion in just a moment. And a reminder that the past portion of Contact has been brought to you in cooperation with Boston University. My guests in the studio, Streeter Stewart, Walter Webb from NICAP on our long-distance line, Major Donald Kehoe, the director of NICAP, and we'll take that next phone call in just a second. This is Bob Kennedy. You're in contact now. You're on the air.
Hello, Bob.
Yes, sir.
This is Chris Paywood out in Needham.
Yes.
And I'd like to ask a question about my science teacher, Mr. Flynn. He claims that within 20 years, approximately, that we will be destroyed by other intelligent beings, either by contamination or else by antimatter. And he definitely claims that we will not see the turn of the century. I wonder if one of your guests could comment on this.
Okay, I'm sure your science teacher, Mr. Flynn, would like very much to comment on that. Whether or not he said this in the classroom, I hope you're not kidding us here, fella. Because it could be kind of embarrassing for Mr. Flynn if not. Well, we'll offer Mr. Flynn equal time some night if it's not true. But, gentlemen, do you have any feelings on this particular one?
Well, as far as I have been able to determine from my reading of the structure of the atom, I don't think that we're in any danger from the destruction from antimatter as such. And not in our lifetime nor at any foreseeable time in the future.
This is Bob Kennedy. You're in contact. You're on the air.
Good evening. Could one of your guests tell me if any of the people who have sighted these objects have been found to have ESP or any other extraordinary sensory powers which would make them, or which would make these things more visible to them than to people without these powers?
All right, ma'am. Fine. Maybe we'll ask Major Kehoe that one. How about that, Major?
Well, we've had a few reports from people who seem to be solid citizens who have apparently ESP to a certain extent, and they've reported being aware of UFO approaches before they actually landed and were sighted. Now, we have never been able to prove any of these cases. However, I would say that 95% or even 99% of the verified factual evidence we have comes from trained aerial observers like the pilots and missile trackers and others that I mentioned a while ago. Now, this isn't discrediting people with ESP, but because it is such a controversial subject, we have not used any of those reports in our forthcoming seven-year analysis.
Okay, sir. Bob Kennedy, you're in contact. You're on the air.
Yes, my name is Joe Budina, and I'm heading East Coast Advertising, Boston, Massachusetts.
Yes, that's everyone's knife for free commercial messages now.
Yes.
What's yours?
And, one of our trademarks under which we are operating is Skylight. And to reply to Mr. Hayes and Major Kehoe and a few other interested members of this, who are operating with the UFO and unidentified flying objects, actually, to bring the technical subject up to date, before we fly, in other words, we are flying aircraft around which has a special sign underneath the aircraft, and we're spelling a commercial message in nighttime. And
you mean it's like an aircraft that goes around with a message and lights underneath it, huh?
Right. This is something new. It just came out a couple of years ago, and I'm a technical director of this whole operation.
Yeah, and you think that some people might be seeing this and assuming it's a UFO?
Possibly, yes.
Well, good. Where does this thing fly around now? What area?
Well, not right now, but we are operating from the Manchester and Massachusetts areas.
Uh-huh.
Logan Airport.
I have seen some of these planes with the night lights, and they are quite spectacular. The lights will come on and go off, and there are some people who are excited by them. I think, though, that if anyone is close enough to them that they get a good look at it, that they wouldn't be any doubt in their mind, but what these were from someplace on Earth and readily recognizable as being advertising.
Mr. Bodino, I think you might recall me. Last summer, I made a study of these reports, and I called your firm up, and you were very helpful in this. And some of the reports did turn out to be these skylight advertising planes. In fact, I saw a number of them myself.
Gentlemen, we have just about run out of time. I'd like to say to Major Kehoe, thank you so much for joining us tonight down there in Virginia, Major.
It's been a great pleasure.
And I hope after this report comes out that you're able to make a trip up to Boston. We'd like to have you across the table from us some evening in person, and we'll discuss this report and talk about this fascinating subject once again of UFO.
I'd like to very much.
Okay, well, that's a date then. Maybe in a month or so we'll have you up here. Get that report out. We'll be very interested in seeing. Send us a copy, please.
I will do that.
Okay, thank you so much. Walt Webb, thank you again for joining us tonight on Contact. And Streeter Stewart, thank you for being our guest and taking time out from your busy duties with WBC News. Tonight, we've been talking about UFO. Tomorrow night on Contact, we'll be talking about the John Birch Society, Anatomy of Protest, the title of a book by J. Allen Royals. Contact is produced by Squire D. Rushnell. Stay tuned for...